Grow Great, episode 4014. My big mistake. I thought it mattered, but it didn't. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome to the podcast, Grow Great. You can find the show notes over at the website, growgreat.com. That's easy enough. This is a special episode. I'm releasing this. I'm not sure when I'm going to release it. I'm recording it on Thursday, March the 10th, 2016. Normally, I release episodes on Tuesday and Thursday. Got the hankering to record this one today. My big mistake. I thought it mattered, but it didn't. Yeah, I'll tell you the story. We'll do it next. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough bandwidth. I certainly don't have enough website storage to tell you about all the mistakes that I have made. So today I'm just going to focus on a big mistake that I've made. And I'm sharing this one because I think it's probably one that you have made as well. Maybe you're still making this mistake. And today's show has just one objective, and it's why it's kind of a special episode, and I'm laboring over when to release this. Here's the objective: to help you learn and think by showing you that you are not alone, even though many days you feel alone. I know as top leaders and as executives and these high-flying, very accomplished and people who have achieved a lot, and I'm not comparing myself to you, but I'm like you. Right? We want to think, well, confidence helps us. I mean, we haven't achieved what we have achieved because we lacked confidence. But even so, there are many days that we can feel alone. I know we're living in a day and age where it's all about the guru and the people that, you know, are so flying at such a higher altitude than we are, and that's who we want to listen to. True confession, I'm not that guy. I'm certainly not a guru. Let me begin by giving you some backstory. I started selling hi-fi gear when I was just a kid in high school, 15 or 16. I loved music. I loved the gear that would play my records. Yep, I'm old. You may not remember vinyl records, or the family sitting down every evening to supper. What did they call it where you lived? Was it supper? Was it dinner? Well, it was supper. I'm from Oklahoma. In fact, while I'm at it, somebody asked me the other day how to pronounce my last name. And I don't know why this entered my head, because it really hasn't entered my head for a very long time. I'm from Oklahoma. Born in the same town as Blake Shelton, by the way, Ada, Oklahoma. Moved away when I was just a kid. And really, I would have to tell you, grew up mostly in Louisiana. Well, in Oklahoma, C-A-N-T-R-E-L-L is Cantrell. Cantrell. So technically, my name is Randy Cantrell. But we got to Louisiana. Well, in Louisiana, you know, there's enough of a French culture there. And there are some people in Louisiana who have the same name, spelled the exact same way, but it's Cantrell. You know, I just, over time, your name is what? I would say Cantrell. And they were like, what? Cantrell. Well, nobody could relate to it. It was Cantrell. I just went with it, and it became Cantrell, and I now commonly call myself that, answer to it. I think my kids do, too. I'll hear my wife say Cantrell every now and again, and people who've known me for a very long time, all my life, they'll still say Cantrell. And I got to thinking, you know, am I abandoning my heritage by saying Cantrell instead of Cantrell? I don't know. We'll see. I might go back. I might change it to what its original intention was, its original pronunciation. Randy Cantrell. I don't know what brought that up. But hey, the Cantrell family would sit down to supper every evening. Yeah, that's what you did. I'm old enough to remember the TV show Bonanza and the Andy Griffith Show, and not because the Andy Griffith Show is some cultural icon thing, but when it was on, I mean, when it was being broadcast in the early 60s. I bet you don't remember ZZ Top when they first came out with a record. Yeah, well, I'm old enough to remember all that and then some. Little did I know that my first job would morph into launching me into a lifelong career in the consumer electronics business, but such is life. And like you, like many of you, I stumbled into a career where I was blessed to be given the helm of a multi-million dollar operation by the time I was in my mid-20s. I've spent most of my adult life leading and building organizations. My education mostly happened in the real world of operating a business, even though I did attend journalism school at LSU. If people were to have asked me, what do you do? I was an operator. I am an operator, proudly. I know not everybody's an operator, but I'm an operator. And part of being an operator was founded in selling because my very first job was in sales. I cared about people. I enjoyed talking with people. Early on, I was mostly interested to find out what their favorite music was and how I could hook them up with a killer stereo to play their favorite records. That's how it all started. And honestly, not much has changed. I mean, it just hasn't. I still enjoy finding out what people get stoked about and what problems they've got that I may be able to help them with. For the past 7 years, I have been mostly coaching and consulting with business owners or top executives. I have reinvented myself more times than I can count. But, you know, that partly goes with the turf, I think, of just growing older. The hippies of the 60s were just slightly before my time, but I remember I was a grade school kid when that happened. I was in first grade when President Kennedy was assassinated. So that'll give you some context. Finding yourself, you know, that was the mantra of the era of the hippie movement. Go find yourself. And I would love to tell you that I found myself very early on. And in a sense, I guess I did, but mostly finding myself has been a lifelong journey of finding myself only to discover that, okay, well, I'm not quite who or what I thought I was, or I'm not quite who or what I want to be, and maybe I'm not even headed in the right direction. During my formative years of running businesses in my 20s and my 30s, we didn't use the term, nor had we ever heard the term, pivot. Pivot. I mean, we grew up learning that's a problem. We've got to fix that problem. Well, that was a mistake. We better go back and fix that. And then all of a sudden, somebody came along and gave it a cool name. We didn't have a cool name. They were mistakes. They were problems. They were issues. Now it's pivoting. I was rather jealous. I was rather jealous that, man, what were we thinking? Why didn't we come up with a cool moniker like pivot and pivoting? I was kind of jealous that we didn't have that term early on in my career. I have to tell you, though, the term, it might let some people off the hook in facing their failure. I mean, for example, people will often today, I will regularly come across in blog posts, in podcasts, in videos, in articles, and even in real life, young entrepreneurs that seem to use failure as a badge of honor. I mean, it's as though they've mistaken failure with trying, you know, and I'm not in favor of putting so much pressure now on success that we refuse to try, but nor am I a fan of not putting enough pressure on it to make the effort count. I don't think there's some badge of honor. Yes, we all fail and we all have to recognize it and face up to it and deal with it and overcome it. But I don't know. There are an awful lot of people, it seems to me, that the object seems to be fail in this whole notion of, you know, fail fast, fail often. Okay, I understand, I think, the deeper meaning of that, but boy, some people take that way too literally, I'm afraid. That brings me to something that we all face and something that in recent months has too often put me in a funk. It's a four-letter word. Now, hey, this is a family-friendly podcast, but it's a terrible four-letter word. Fear. And you've likely heard the adage that fear stands for false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. Well, that resonates with all of us because our fear, it is real. It feels really real. If you Google the term fear, you will find over 523 million results in less than half a second. 523 million, half a billion search results for one of the most fatal four-letter words in the English language, fear. Well, let me use a word that's better, at least in describing what I often feel. That's right, I said often. So don't let that get past you. Often. Here's the word. You ready for it? You'll relate to this one too. Anxiety. Anxiety. Okay, well, let's define some terms. We need definitions to help us stay on the same page. Fear is defined this way. An unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or a threat. You get it? Fear, an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or a threat. Now, here's the definition of anxiety. Anxiety, a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome. Anxiety, a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome. Now, in case you were wondering, Google the term anxiety, you don't get 523 million results. You get 167 million search results, not nearly as many as fear. Now, do those definitions help you understand the difference between fear and anxiety? Okay, yeah, probably not very well. Now, thanks to Google and thanks to the folks over at GoZen.com, an organization dedicated to the relief of childhood anxiety, and a video that they produced, thanks to them and this video, we can get a better grip on the difference between the two. If you go to the website, go to growgreat.com, find episode 4014. All the titles, by the way, begin with the number of the episode. That isn't for SEO reasons because it doesn't do anything with SEO. It's for you. It's a convenience factor so that you can plug into the search box over the website the number. You don't have to remember the title. You just have to know the number 4014, 4014. If you'll plug that in and go over there, I have embedded this video. This is a 90-second video entitled Fear versus Anxiety, What's the Difference? And I'll give you the punchline because the video doesn't have narration. The video is just, it is a video, but it's basically a slide deck and some movement and it's words. But nobody's narrating, so this is an audio podcast. There's no way for you to read it. But I'll tell you, the punchline. I do want you to go look at it, though. GrowGreat.com, episode 4014. Here's the crux of it. Fear is from immediate danger. Anxiety is from our thoughts. Big difference, right? Now, that's also my big mistake, letting my anxiety completely and utterly trip me up. And I want you to learn. I want you to learn from my big mistake, even if you're one of those special, very special, fearless people. I mean, boy, do I envy you. If you are fearless, if you are able to live your life with no anxiety, well, you're not human. We all do. Now, as a lifelong operator, I am very used to problem solving. Years spent in the luxury retailing business, one of the fastest moving industries on the planet, where profits are paper thin and competition is around every corner, there is little time to strategize and formulate a plan that takes weeks or months to execute. You just don't have the time. You have to have a gunfighter's mentality and a gunfighter's skill set. Put your weapon on and pull your weapon faster than the other guy, fire it faster than the other guy, and hit the target. And if you miss, forget a pivot. Ain't no pivot. I mean, sometimes your miss can be deadly and it can set you back months, if not years. Well, sometimes it could be fatal. That margin for error adds to the pressure of making sure that your fast action is on point as much as it can be. And I loved it. In fact, I relished it. And being the speed freak that I was, my claim to fame always was, and frankly still is, by the time the other guy's making his first shot, I've taken three. So when he's taking his first shot, I'm taking my third. Question. Do you think, based on the feedback that I had gotten from the two prior shots, that my third shot is likely to be more accurate than his first? Well, of course. Now, that's what speed does for you, and I'm a speed freak. Even my wife called me a stress junkie for that kind of stress, right? The stress of competing and being fast. I mean, it drove me for over four decades. There was only one word for it: exhilarating. I mean, it was just exhilarating. It was like oxygen for me. Now, back in 2009, I stepped away from the C-suite to serve other CEOs and top executives. And at first, it was with consulting, right? I mean, it's roll your sleeves up, get your hands dirty, do the work kind of stuff. And I enjoyed the work. The problem is, more often than not, I was frustrated by a business owner or a CEO or a top leader who wanted one or more of what I have called the trifecta of business building. You've heard me say this. Here's the trifecta of business building. Whatever you're doing, this will sum up everything that you do. The trifecta of business building is get new customers, serve existing customers better, and not go crazy in the process. That's it. Well, my clients would want two or more of those. But I had a problem. I was, and I always have been, fanatical about customer experience. Making customers happy was not negotiable for me, ever. I wanted customers to be dazzled. Sometimes I found myself doing work for a CEO or a business owner, and guess what? They were not so passionate about it. And few things in my career ever frustrated me like getting in my car and driving home from a client engagement, knowing, full well knowing, that they had very unhappy customers and they just didn't much care. Drove me nuts. So I walked away from it. Consulting was something I was good at, but I just found it too difficult to find CEOs and business owners who would walk the talk of customer happiness. And that was almost 3 years ago. Well, say hello to what most people call coaching. I just started by calling it serving because that's what it was and that's what it is. But, you know, the world likes labels. In the business world, man, we're worse than most. We really like labels. And so, okay, coaching it is. Well, now I was on to something. I wasn't bringing the answers. Mostly I was bringing the questions, and that was something I was always very good at. Since I was in my 20s, organizations that I have led have heard me preach, the quality of our questions determines the quality of our business. The quality of our questions determines the quality of our business. I preached it because it was true. I preached it because I believed it. I preached it because I still think it's true and I still preach it. The quality of our questions determines the quality of our business. The better our questions, the better opportunities we have to build a great business and deliver great experiences to our customers. I believe that. Okay, so it seemed fitting to take that experience of running businesses and in asking great questions to take those skills to serve other CEOs, business owners, and top leaders. And I would connect with one leader who would need and want my help, and that would lead to another. And I wasn't a marketing genius by a long shot. I'm certainly not a marketing genius, but I was focused on the work. I was focused on the service to help people grow and to help them grow their business. And unlike some people in this field, I was not driven to become a fixture. I mean, repeatedly, I would find myself telling clients that their success is my success. I had a vested interest in helping them achieve more. Sometimes that meant fixing a problem. Sometimes it meant seizing an opportunity. Sometimes it was purely work-related. Sometimes it wasn't. It was very personal. Didn't matter. I was a resource with a single aim of helping this leader navigate through whatever water they were traveling through at the time. And there were times that it was merely months. There were other times it was years. The connections that I forged were real and deep because, well, it's the only way I know how to roll. I know coaches who are perfectly comfortable with a one-and-done approach. They are perfectly comfortable with a one-off kind of a relationship. I wasn't. I never have been. So when Vistage International came knocking on my virtual door some months back, asking me if I would be interested in building a new CEO peer advisory group in Dallas-Fort Worth, I was intrigued and I was interested. Now, I was never a member of Vistage, and I had only come to learn of them about 3 to 4 years ago when a CEO I had known had become a Vistage chair. He was a member of Vistage. I never was, and until he became a chair and kind of put it out there to the world, including me, hey, this is what I'm doing now, I'd never heard of it. A Vistage chair, by the way, is a person, very often an ex-CEO like me, driven largely to give back and to serve others, who they preside over a peer advisory group in these group meetings and then in one-to-one individual sessions with each member. Call them coaching if you want. Well, when I first learned about it, I was flabbergasted that I'd never heard of it because Vistage was born the same year I was, 1957. And I remember thinking, I wish somebody would have told me about this 20 years ago. But nobody did. Never ever while running businesses was I ever approached by anybody, by a Vistage chair, to investigate becoming a member of their group, to see what this was all about. I never ever was given the opportunity to do that. Well, I endured the scrutiny of Vistage. It's a rigorous process, I don't mind telling you. I mean, you kind of feel like, I don't know. You kind of feel like you've got to go through an NSA investigation and survive it. I mean, it's a rigorous process, the vetting process. Kudos to them. They do a good job. I found myself invited to attend a week-long training in the city of their headquarters, San Diego. Now, by this point, I had had weeks to think about this and ponder this and read over a lot of material that they had made available to me. And by this point, I started to say I was somewhat serious about the opportunity, but that's not right. I was fully serious about it. In fact, so much so that I went to San Diego having pretty much already pushed all my chips into the middle of the table to make this a priority in my life's work. And it was a big decision. It was one that I did not make lightly. In fact, my wife will confess to you that she endured many, many, many hours of me talking and her listening and her talking a whole lot less and me listening a whole lot less because I talk, she doesn't. Hearing me rattle on and on about this, and she's always been supportive and told me to do whatever I felt was best for both of us. And she knows I love her and she knows I care about her and she trusts me. Hold that thought because that's going to be important. I'm going to come back around to that. Now, during the holiday season last year is when all this was happening. And you can say, well, man, what an awful time. Yeah, it kind of was. But it is what it is, right? I mean, when opportunity knocks, you either open or you say, nah, not right now, or no, not ever. Well, the door knocked. I opened. I answered it. But anxiety was kicking in. And anxiety had kicked the door down. And it was ramping up speed. I'd never done this work of assembling a group of CEOs to be in a group together. I've never done that, ever. My work has always been individual or with a small team who reported to an individual, to a leader. And my clients had almost always been referrals. And as a one-man band, I never needed a full stable of clients to live the way my wife and I were accustomed. I'd be lying if I said that chasing customers or hustling clients, and I mean both of those in the most positive ways that you can imagine, by the way, but chasing customers and hustling clients, it was never a major part of my skill set. It just wasn't. And I was good, even great at what I did, but I wasn't experienced at all in getting multiple clients simultaneously or in trying to do it sooner than later. It was not in my repertoire of things that I had learned to do. It started as fear, but that very quickly gave way to anxiety as I realized that nothing bad was really going to happen to me. There was no threat. What's the worst thing that can happen? I'm a guy who has always asked and answered that question. You just ask my kids who are now grown. I taught them from the time they were small to ask it and answer it. Because I learned myself as a kid that lots of people ask, what's the worst thing that can happen? I quickly discovered in life, not many people have the courage to answer it. Well, I was always willing to answer it, and so that's what I did. I began to answer the question. And the answers, yeah, of course, the answers were laughable. Okay, if I were to approach a CEO about the value, which I believe is extraordinarily high, the value of being a member of Vistage, what's the worst thing that can happen? They could hang up on me. They could kick me out of their office. They could dog cuss me. Okay, truthfully, that first one, hang up, that likely is the worst and most real thing that they could do. Hang up on me. Oh, my, my, my. Oh, man, what kind of a wuss am I? Somebody hangs up on you and it just breaks you. I thought that. I thought, man, alive, you moron, what are you doing? I thought, and there it was. There it was, the problem behind it all. The whole difference between fear and anxiety. My thoughts. I was letting my thoughts race out of control. I was looking into some fictitious future where terrible things would befall me simply because I was attempting to help people. I'm just trying to help people see and better understand an opportunity that I was never given when I was running companies. What kind of a demon villain must I be? I mean, what a horrible thing to be doing. I can't believe you're trying to expose me to something that could actually help me. What do you think you're doing? I wasn't trying to sell anybody anything. Fact is, Vistage is not for everybody. I wasn't trying to convince people of anything. I mean, people either want the value of being part of a group whose sole aim is to help one another, or they don't. I wasn't trying to persuade people to like me. I mean, people either resonate with me or they don't. It's no different with this podcast. You either enjoy listening to me or you don't. I can't sell that to you. I can't say, well, let me give you 10 reasons why you should listen to me. I mean, you either like me or you don't. Think about your own anxiety, because that's the point here. The point isn't me. The point isn't Vistage. The point is my anxiety in this endeavor. I want you to think about your own anxiety because I want you to learn from my mistake. And here's what I did. I sat down the other day and I hit record on my iTalk app. By the way, if you have an iPhone, it's by Griffin. The website, I'm putting a link there. No, it's not an affiliate link. You can assume that the links are affiliate links, but this one's not. Go to growgreat.com, episode 4014, iTalk app by Griffin. It is a terrific audio recording app for iOS. It's $1.99, and it is well worth it. Now, I'm an audio snob, so there is that. So I've got my phone. I put it out on the counter. I'm standing in the kitchen. Actually, I'm sitting in the kitchen, and I put it on the counter, and I open up my iTalk app, and I hit record. And here's what I did, and I want this to help you. So, again, I'm just telling my story, not for any reason except to get you to think about your own. I asked myself questions. I decided to do for myself what I do for clients all the time. I decided to sit down with myself and ask questions designed to help me gain clarity and resolve. Questions aimed at getting to the crux of the matter. I didn't pre-think it. I didn't write it out. I just hit record and I went. That's right. I didn't pre-think one thing. I didn't make a single note. I didn't write anything down. I just got an urge and a hankering to do this, as we say here in Texas, and I did it. And if you've never experienced that, if you've never experienced questions aimed at getting to the crux of the matter, if you've never experienced that, but you'd like to, I'm going to share with you a kind of sort of secret page where I don't do this very often, but I sometimes offer people a free taste of what it's like. Now, let me tell you why I do this. I do this because I have found there's too many people that have never experienced it. Do I occasionally get clients out of it? I do. Is that the aim of it? Yeah, kind of. Because I want to be good at it. But the big aim is to give people a taste of it. Because when people taste it, man alive, do they see the power. So, it's a taste of what it's like to have somebody help you without any agenda other than to help you move forward. You ready for the link? I'm going to give it to you. There's a hyperlink on the website, growgreat.com, episode 4014. But I'm going to tell it to you, and I'm going to whisper it to you because I don't want this. I can't do this for everybody. Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com/onebigthing. BulaNetwork.com/onebigthing. One is spelled out. Okay. I'm a smart guy. I'm sitting here. I've hit record, and I'm a smart guy. And it's dawning on me. Why have I not asked myself these questions? Why have I not interviewed myself before? I don't know. I mean, it does seem kind of crazy, doesn't it? Talk to yourself. I mean, because like right now, it may seem like I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to myself. But boy, on this occasion, I was talking to myself because you haven't heard this recording and no, you're not going to hear it. It just happened. You know, I got the urge and I got the notion to do it. And so I hit record and the recording went on for an hour and 45 minutes. I was interrupted by some phone calls, but I picked back up right after each interruption. So the recording itself is an hour and 45 minutes. And I have listened to that recording at least 3 times now. It's fascinating to hear how even the tone in my voice changes as I'm asking the questions to the person who is answering the questions. It's all me. It's just me. But it's kind of odd. It's kind of odd. I did it because over the past few months, I've learned the power of stepping outside ourselves to examine our thoughts from a more objective place. Now, I didn't always know this. You know, all those little voices in your head, they will drive you nuts if you let them. And most of us, we really never deal with them. And the common refrain is be more confident. Well, really simple, oversimplified advice that doesn't help a person who is struggling with confidence. Don't go tell somebody who's battling a confidence issue, well, you need to be more confident. I mean, it's like telling a fat person, well, lose weight. Go tell a poor person, well, get rich. It's crazy. Oh, but that's the world we live in. Pundits, gurus, experts, be more confident. And as long as they say it with enough passion, we're like, man, that was awesome, wasn't it? Aren't they great? Oversimplified advice. Well, ditto for our head noise. So it's bad advice when we have head trash and we got these voices in our head. It's bad advice when somebody says, well, don't listen to it. Stop listening to that. Well, it doesn't work. I mean, the more you try to quieten the voices, the louder they begin to shout. I knew that didn't work. And so I went looking for better answers and I found them first in some YouTube videos by a fellow named Gary Van Warmerdam. There's a name. Talk about Cantrell versus Cantrell. Gary Van Warmerdam. I'd never heard of this guy. But I found some video. I can't tell you what I Googled or what I put in the search box at YouTube, but I came to a video by him. I'm embedding that over at the show notes, growgreat.com, episode 4014. I know you're tired of hearing about it. Understanding belief systems. That was the video. Understanding belief systems. Now, I'll warn you, the cat's, you know, the cat's kind of got that therapist. He's kind of got that therapist voice, and, you know, but hey, it works, you know. That led me to Gary's book, Mind Works, A Practical Guide for Changing Thoughts, Beliefs, and Emotional Reactions. Well, that was important because I had not gone through, even an impractical guide for such things, much less a practical guide. So I'm like, well, okay, well, this is good. So I bought the book on Kindle. And I went through some of the exercises, and some of the exercises that Gary suggests in his book is to identify these characters that are talking to you, these voices in your head, these characters that are telling us various things. Well, I had already done that, see. By the time I get to the interviewing myself, and I will tell you this, had I not done those exercises, I'm not sure I would have been compelled to interview myself as I did. So that's important. So by the time I hit record to interview myself, I had already identified, are you ready for this? I had already identified 10 different characters who lived inside my head. 10 characters that you, I guess Gary would say, and other experts would say, you know, are characters in my personality. They're not me, but they're kind of characters of my personality. 10 of them. Now, Gary's suggestion was that you give them names. I did that too. I did. I'm telling you. And this is complete, total honesty in hopes that it will help you. And it will, if you'll let it. I had learned what you may not yet know. Brace yourself. I am brilliant. I am brilliant. Now, here's the truth of it. So are you. So I'm not that special. But I am brilliant. So are you. And here's why we're brilliant. We can hold multiple viewpoints and multiple opinions and multiple beliefs, which often contradict each other. Do you know that? Think about it. I mean, for example, I am so talented that I can believe Conrad the Confident. That's right. Conrad lives in my head. Conrad the Confident, he's one of those voices, and here's what Conrad tells me: that I'm experienced, I'm capable, I'm empathetic, I'm good at what I do. I've got skins on the wall, been there, done it, and I can prove that I know what I'm doing, and I'll be successful. Conrad tells me so. And at the same time, I got another voice, and his name is Philip. Philip the Prophet. Now, Philip is there. He's telling me all along the way, this is never going to work. You're an idiot for even trying this. What are you doing? You know you can't do this. Now, how can Conrad the Confident and Philip the Prophet, how can they both be correct? Well, they can't. But that doesn't stop me from believing both of them at the same time. See, told you I was brilliant. Well, so are you. What are you laughing at? You have the exact same ability as me because it happens to you all the time, just like it does me. You believe contradictory things about yourself all the time, not because they're true, but because you're buying what they're selling. You're willing to believe that they're true. You're willing to believe that they're right. You're willing to believe that they've got your best interest at heart. They don't. They just have their perspective. All right, I got to insert here. I'm a Christian. And if you're offended by that, get over it. I don't make any apologies for it. And I'm an elder at a small congregation in Fort Worth, and it's an accomplishment that I'm proud of for myself and for my family. And it's not a title. It's not a position. It's a work. It's a service. God is important. God is first, because that's the spot that God demands. And so as I'm interviewing myself, I ask myself an important question. Came out of the blue. Here's the question I asked myself. Do you trust God? And I answered, I do. And then I asked myself, then how do you resolve all this anxiety when Luke 12 and other Bible verses command Christians to not be anxious, but to trust God? How do you resolve all that? And right there, I was thrown to the floor and I was put into a chokehold that I could not escape. I mean, it was a gotcha moment for me. I had to confess that I wasn't trusting God as I should. And I saw my big mistake. Letting anxiety rule my life and cripple my efforts in being the Christian that I should be. Letting my anxiety rule my life and cripple my efforts in helping CEOs learn about an opportunity that is so valuable it could change their lives for the better. And all the people that they serve. And all the people in their family. And in that interview with myself, I had to admit that there were only two things I was attempting to find out from CEOs anyway. One, are you interested in Vistage and being considered for membership in my group? Number two, if you are, am I interested in interviewing you for consideration as a member in my group? That's it. That's it. Two things to find out. No hard sell. Shoot, no soft sell. Just an information exchange. Just two people sitting down face to face to have a conversation to examine whether they mutually want to proceed or not. And either way, it's okay. I mean, either way. God isn't going to be pleased or displeased either way. What displeases God is my being anxious and not trusting Him. Shame on me. An hour and 44 minutes or so, I stopped the recording. I went to a quiet, dark spot, and I knelt down and I prayed. Yeah, and I asked for forgiveness. For weeks and months, I've been riddled with some of the highest anxiety of my life, putting pressure on myself and letting some others put pressure on me to make so many phone calls, contact so many people, do this, don't do that, say this, don't say that. And I've come to conclude that I've made a terrible mistake. One of the biggest mistakes of my life in recent years. Maybe one of the biggest mistakes of my life ever. I let myself fall prey to my own anxieties. I've forgotten who I was and what I was. And I've been listening to too many of the wrong voices, and I've been ignoring the right ones. Is that you? Have you got things all worked out in your head, and it doesn't look very good? How many characters are talking to you right now, telling you everything from you can't to yes, you can? Well, I've identified 10 of my own, and I'm betting that there are more in there. I just haven't looked closely enough. I stopped at 10. How many obstacles are standing in your way to achieve what you most want for your career and for your company and for your family? Hey, and don't sit there and be ashamed thinking, well, CEOs and top leaders, we don't experience these kinds of things. We shouldn't experience these things. I'm 58 years old. I've run many companies. I've led lots of people over the course of my life. I've been capable and successful. I got some skins on the wall. But here I am at this ripe old age battling things that you would have thought I might have long ago conquered. Hey, you and me, welcome to the human race. And I'm not sharing this for any other reason than to make you realize that you're not alone. We're all in this together. Some of us are open and honest. Okay, I got both my arms in the air. Some of us are more willing than others to put ourselves out there. I'm hoping that through hearing my struggles and hearing my big mistake, I'm hoping that you'll find some courage to help yourself and you'll find some willingness to be helped. Listen, I thought many things mattered. Details, strategies, tactics, fears, anxieties. I was wrong. They don't matter. They don't matter at all. At the end of my interview with myself, I asked myself this question about my anxieties. And after I had heard in my head and even had answered aloud how wrong-headed and how illogical most of my anxieties were, here was the question that I asked myself as I got to the end of the recording. Can you open both hands and let them go? Can you open both hands and let them go? I don't know why I asked that. I don't know why that was, you know, this imagery that I painted with these words. I mean, I wasn't physically holding on to these anxieties, but the words felt right, you know, the question felt right. The question felt right to the part of me that was asking it, and it felt really right to the person that was tasked to answer the question. Can you open both hands and let them go? And I'll end today's show by asking you the same question. Can you open both hands and let them go? I mean, there you sit. There you sit in your nice corner office. You're the founder. You're the CEO. You're the top dog. Everybody's looking to you for the answers. You're surrounded by smart people. Maybe they're direct reports, their employees, their service providers, their financial partners. They're all the rest of that cast of characters who surround you. They're all terrific, and they're all doing a good job in serving you or trying. But they're all beholden to you. Every single one of them want or need something from you. They need a paycheck, their career, a contract, some ongoing client relationship. They need something. But deep inside your heart and deep inside your head, anxiety. Your thoughts. Because as human beings, we've got this terrific skill that serves us really well. We can put ourselves in some fictionalized place, a place where we don't exist, but we can project ourselves into a place and we can project out into the future. Other creatures can't do that. Only mankind can do that. We have these thoughts. You believe certain things based on those thoughts, and those beliefs often limit you. But who can you talk to? Who can ask you the questions that desperately need to be answered? Well, the ones that need to be asked. Who can help you open both your hands and let it go? I answered out loud on my recording my answer to the question, can you open both hands and let them, these anxieties, let them go? And my answer was, yes, I can. And that's what I'm attempting to do. That's what I'm trying to do. And yes, trying is a good thing because I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Yes, sometimes more successfully than at other times. But I'm going to succeed. Conrad the Confident, he's convinced me. I'm doing the work. By the way, I've got an answer to that question of who can help you do the same thing. My name is... What is my name? Is it Randy Cantrell? Is it Randy Cantrell? It's still Randy Cantrell. But you can call me Cantrell. I'm not offended either way. I appreciate you clicking play. You have given me over 48 minutes of your time. That's huge. That's huge. Even if you listen to him at not half speed, but double speed, that's what, 24 minutes. So good for you. Thanks for clicking play. I seriously want all the best for you. I want your business to thrive. We need your business to thrive. Your family needs your business to thrive. Your employees need your business to thrive. It's what we're here for. It's why we rebranded the podcast now some 14 or so episodes ago to Grow Great, because it is about building a great business. And guess who builds great businesses? Great business leaders. That's you. And I'm here to help. Visit the website, growgreat.com. Subscribe to the podcast, tell a friend. Just don't tell an enemy, because I want to bring value and good stuff, and I don't want your enemies getting hold of it. This is for you. Greetings from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.